Erica Singer, a 5 and nobody. Fall from Max and Shreve, a 1. The 1. How did this happen when I'd spent the last 2 years bracing myself for life as a 6? A tiny part of my heart throbbed. How would I explain this to Aspen? How would I tell him that Maxon had chosen me and that I wanted to be with him? Would he hate me? The thought made me want to cry. No matter what, I didn't want to lose Aspen's friendship. I couldn't. My maids didn't knock when they came in, which was typical. They always tried to let me rest as long as I could, and after the party I certainly needed it. But instead of going to prep things, Mary went around to May and gently rubbed her shoulder to wake her. I rolled over to see Anne and Lucy with a garment bag. A new dress? "Miss May," Mary whispered, "it's time to get up." May slowly roused. "Can't I sleep?" "No," Mary said sadly. "There's some important business this morning. You need to go to your parents right away." "Important business?" I asked. "What's going on?" Mary looked at Anne, and I followed her eyes. Anne shook her head, and that seemed to be the end of it. Confused but hopeful, I got out of bed, encouraging May to do the same. I gave her a big hug before she went to Mom and Dad's room. Once she left, I turned back to my maids. "Can you explain now that she's gone?" I asked Anne. She shook her head. Frustrated, I huffed, "Would it help if I commanded you to tell?" She looked at me, a clear solemnity in her eyes. "Our orders came from much higher. You'll have to wait." I stood at the door to my bathroom and watched them move. Lucy's hands were shaking as she pulled out fistfuls of rose petals for my bath, and Mary's eyebrows were knit together as she lined up my makeup and the pins for my hair. Lucy sometimes trembled for no reason at all, and Mary tended to do that with her face when she was concentrating. It was Anne's look that made me scared. She was always put together, even in the most frightening and taxing of situations. But today she looked as if her body was full of sand, her whole frame low with worry. She kept stopping and rubbing her forehead as if she could smooth away the anxiety in her face. I looked on as she pulled my dress out of the garment bag. It was understated, simple, and jet black. I looked at that dress and knew it could only mean one thing. I started crying before I even knew who I was mourning. "Miss?" Mary came to help me. "Who died?" I asked. "Who died?" Anne, steady as ever, pulled me upright and wiped the tears from under my eyes. "No one has died," she said. But her voice wasn't comforting, it was commanding. "Be grateful for that when this is all over. No one died today." She gave me no further explanation and sent me straight to my bath. Lucy tried to keep herself under control, but when she finally broke into tears, Anne asked her to go get me something light to eat, and she jumped on the command obediently. She didn't even curtsy as she left. Lucy eventually returned with some croissants and apple slices. I wanted to sit and eat slowly, stretching out my time, but one bite was all it took for me to know that food was not my friend today. Finally, Anne placed my name pin on my chest, the silver shining beautifully against the black of my dress. There was nothing left for me to do but face this unimaginable fate. I opened my door, but found myself frozen. Turning back to my maids, I breathed out my fear. "I'm scared." Anne put her hands on my shoulders and spoke. "You are a lady now, miss. You must handle this like a lady." I gave a small nod as she released me, unclenched my hands from the door, and walked away. I wish I could have said my head was high, but honestly, lady or not, I was terrified. To my immense surprise, when I reached the foyer, the rest of the girls were waiting, all wearing dresses and expressions similar to my own. A wave of relief hit me. I wasn't in trouble. If anything, we all were, so at least I wouldn't be going through whatever this was alone.
"There's the 5th, a guard said to his counterpart. "Follow us, ladies."
5th? No, that wasn't right. It was 6. As we walked down the stairs, I quickly scanned the girls. The guard was right. Only five. Marley wasn't there. My first thought was that Maxon had sent Marley home, but wouldn't she have come by my room to say goodbye? I tried to think of a relationship between all this secrecy and Marley's absence, and nothing I came up with made sense. At the bottom of the stairs, an assembly of guards waited, along with our families. Mom, Dad, and May seemed anxious. Everyone did. I looked at them hoping for some sort of clarity, but Mom shook her head while Dad gave me a shrug. I scanned the uniformed men for Aspen. He wasn't there. I saw a pair of guards escorting Marley's parents to the back of our line. Her mother was hunched with worry, and she leaned into her husband, his face heavy, as if he had aged years in a single night. Wait. If Marley was gone, why were they here? I turned as a burst of light flooded the foyer. For the first time since I'd been at the palace, the front doors were both opened wide, and we were paraded outside. We crossed the short, circular driveway and headed past the massive walls that fenced us into the grounds. As the gates creaked open, the deafening sound of a massive crowd greeted us. A large platform had been set up in the street. Hundreds, maybe thousands of people were crowded together, children sitting on the shoulders of their parents. Cameras were positioned around the platform, and production people were running in front of the crowds, capturing the scene. We were led to a small section of stadium seats, and the crowd cheered for us as we walked out. I could see the shoulders of every girl in front of me relax as the people in the streets called out our names and threw flowers at our feet. I lifted my hand in a wave as people called my name. I felt so silly for worrying. If the people were this happy, nothing bad could be happening. The staff at the palace really needed to rethink the way they handled the elite. All that anxiety for nothing. May giggled, happy to be a part of the excitement, and I was relieved to see her back to herself. I tried to keep up with all the well-wishers, but I was distracted by the two odd structures waiting on the platform. The first was a ladder-like contraption in the shape of an A. The second was a large wooden block with loops on either end. With a guard at my side, I climbed into my seat in the middle of the front row and tried to figure out what was going on. The crowd erupted again as the king, queen, and Maxon emerged. They too were dressed in dark clothes and wore sober expressions. I was close to Maxon, so I turned his way. Whatever was happening, if he looked at me and smiled, I knew it would be fine. I kept willing him to glance at me, to give me some sort of acknowledgement. But Maxon's face was hard. A moment later, the crowd's cheers turned into cries of disdain, and I turned to see what made them so unhappy. My stomach twisted as I watched my world shatter. Officer Woodwork was being dragged out in chains. His lip was bleeding and his clothes were so dirty he looked like he'd spent the night rolling in mud. Behind him, Marley, her beautiful angel costume lacking its wings and covered in grime, was also in chains. A suit coat covered her hunched shoulders and she squinted into the light. She took in the massive crowd, finding my eyes for a split second before she was pulled forward again. She searched once more, and I knew who she was seeking out. To my left, I saw Marley's parents watching, gripping each other tightly. They were visibly crushed, gone from this place, as if their very hearts had abandoned them. I looked back to Marley and Officer Woodwork. The anxiety in their faces was obvious, yet they walked with a certain pride. Only once when Marley tripped over the hem of her dress did that veneer crack. Beneath it, terror awaited. No. No, 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 no. As they were led up onto the platform, a man in a mask began speaking. The crowd hushed for him. Apparently, this, whatever it was, had happened before, and the people here knew how to respond. But I didn't. My body lurched forward and my stomach heaved. Thank goodness I hadn't eaten.
Marley Thames, the man called, one of the selected, a daughter of Ilia, was found last night in an intimate moment with this man, Carter Woodwork, a trusted member of the Royal Guard.
The crier's voice was full of an inappropriate amount of self-importance, as if he was reciting the cure for some deadly disease. The crowd booed again at his accusations.
Miss Thames has broken her vow of loyalty to our Prince Maxon, and Mr. Woodwork has essentially stolen property of the royal family through his relations with Miss Thames. These offenses are treason to the royal family.
He was shrieking out his statements, willing the crowd to agree, and they did. But how could they? Didn't they know this was Marley? Sweet, beautiful, trusting, giving Marley? She made a mistake, maybe, but nothing deserving of this much hatred. Carter was being strapped up to the A-shaped frame by another masked man, his legs spread wide and his arms pulled into a position that mimicked the structure. Padded belts were wrapped around his waist and legs, tightened to a point that looked uncomfortable, even from here. Marley was forced to kneel in front of the large wooden block as a man ripped the coat from her back. Her wrists were bound down to the loops on either side, palms up. She was crying.
This is a crime punishable by death. But in his mercy, Prince Maxon is going to spare these two traitors their lives. Long live Prince Maxon!
The crowd chanted after the man. If I had been in my right mind, I would have known I was supposed to call out too, or at least applaud. The girls around me did, and so did our parents, even if they were in shock. But I wasn't paying attention. All I saw were Marley's and Carter's faces. We had been given front row seats for a reason, to show us what would happen if we made such a stupid mistake. But from here, not more than 20 feet from the platform, I could see and hear everything that really mattered. Marley was staring at Carter, and he was looking right back at her, craning his neck to do so. The fear was unmistakable, but there was also this look on her face, as if she was trying to reassure him that he was worth all this.
I love you, Marley, he called to her.
It was barely audible over the crowd, but it was there.
We're going to be okay. It'll be okay, I promise.
Marley couldn't speak in her fear, but she nodded back at him. In that moment, all I could think of was how beautiful she looked. Her golden hair was messy and her dress a disaster, and she'd lost her shoes at some point, but my God, she looked radiant.
Marley Thames and Carter Woodwork, you are now both hereby stripped of your castes. You are the lowest of the low. You are eights.
The crowd cheered, which seemed wrong. Weren't there any eights standing here who hated being referred to that way?
And to inflict upon you the shame and pain you have brought on His Majesty, you will be publicly caned with 15 strikes. May your scars remind you of your many sins.
Caned? What did that even mean? My answer came a second later. The two masked men who had bound Carter and Marley pulled long rods out of a bucket of water. They swiped them in the air a few times, testing them out, and I could hear the sticks whistling as they cut at the air. The crowd applauded this warm-up with the same frenzy and adoration they had just given the selected. In a few seconds, Carter's backside would be humiliatingly struck, and Marley's precious hands.
No! I cried. No!
I think I'm going to be sick, Natalie whispered as Elise made a weak moan into her guard's shoulder. But nothing stopped. I stood up and lunged toward Maxon's seat, falling over my father's lap.
Maxon! Maxon, stop this!
You have to sit down, miss,
my guard said, trying to wrangle me back into my chair.
Maxon, I beg you, please.
It's not safe, miss.
Get off me,
I yelled at my guard, kicking him as hard as I could. Try as I may, he held on tight.
America, please sit down,
my mother urged.
One,
cried the man on the stage, and I saw the cane fall on Marley's hands. She let out the most pathetic whimper, like a dog that had been kicked. Carter made no sound.
Maxon! Maxon! I yelled. Stop it! Stop it, please!
He heard me. I know he did. I saw him slowly close his eyes and swallow one time, as if he could push the sound out of his head.
Two.
Marley's cry was pure anguish. I couldn't imagine her pain, and there were still 13 more strikes to go.
America, sit, Mom insisted.
May was between her and Dad, her face averted, her cries almost as pained as Marley's.
Three.
I looked at Marley's parents. Her mother buried her head in her hands, her father's arm wrapped around her, as if he could protect her from everything they were losing in that moment.
Let me go, I yelled at my guard, to no avail. Maxon, I screamed.
My tears were blurring my vision, but I could see him enough to know he'd heard me. I looked at the other girls. Shouldn't we do something? Some appeared to be crying, too. Elise was bent over, a palm pressed to her forehead, looking as if she might pass out. No one seemed angry, though. Shouldn't they be?
Five.
The sound of Marley's shrieks would haunt me for the rest of my life. I'd never heard anything like it, or the sickening echo of the crowd cheering it on, as if this was merely entertainment, or Maxon's silence, allowing this to happen, or the crying of the girls around me accepting it. The only thing that gave me any sort of hope was Carter. Even though he was sweating from the trauma and shaking with pain, he managed to pant out comforting words to Marley.
It'll be over soon, he managed. Six. Love you, he stammered.
I couldn't handle this. I tried to claw at my guard, but his thick sleeves protected him. I shrieked as he grabbed me tighter.
Get your hands off my daughter, Dad yelled, pulling the guard's arms.
With that space, I wiggled myself until I was facing him and thrust my knee up as hard as I could. He let out a muffled cry and fell back, my dad catching him on the way down. I hopped over the railing, clumsy in my dress and heeled shoes.
Marley! Marley! I screamed, running as quickly as I could.
I almost got to the steps, but two guards caught up with me, and that was a fight I couldn't win. From the angle behind the stage, I saw that they'd exposed Carter's backside, and his skin was already torn, pieces hanging sickeningly. Blood was trickling down, ruining what used to be his dress pants. I couldn't imagine the state of Marley's hands. The thought sent me into an even deeper hysteria. I screamed and kicked at the guards, but all that accomplished was the loss of one of my shoes. I was dragged inside as the man cried out for the next strike, and I didn't know whether to be grateful or ashamed. On the one hand, I didn't have to see it all. On the other, I felt like I'd abandoned Marley in the worst possible moment of her life. If I had been a true friend, wouldn't I have done better than that?
Marley! I screamed. Marley, I'm sorry!
But the crowd was so frenzied and she was crying so much, I didn't think she heard me. Chapter 10. I thrashed and shrieked all the way back. The guards had to hold me so tightly that I knew I'd be covered in bruises later, but I didn't care. I had to fight.
Where's her room?
I heard one ask, and twisted to see a maid walking down the hall. I didn't recognize her, but she clearly knew me. She escorted the guards to my door. I heard my maid shouting in protest at the way I was being handled.
Calm down, miss. That's no way to behave, a guard said with a grunt as they threw me onto my bed.
Get the hell out of my room, I screamed. My maids, all of them in tears, rushed over to me. Mary started trying to get the dirt from my fall off my dress, but I slapped her hands away. They knew. They knew, and they didn't warn me.
You too, I yelled at them. I want all of you out, now.
They recoiled at my words, and the tremors running down Lucy's little body almost made me regret saying them. But I had to be alone.
We're sorry, miss, Anne said, pulling the other two back. They knew how close I was to Marley.
Marley, just go, I whispered, turning to bury my face in my pillow.
Once the door clicked shut, I slipped off my remaining shoe and climbed deeper into bed, finally making sense of 100 tiny details. So this was the secret she had been too afraid to share. She didn't want to stay because she wasn't in love with Maxon, but she didn't want to leave and be separated from Carter. A dozen moments suddenly made sense. Why she chose to stand in certain places or stared toward doors. It was Carter. He was there. The time the King and Queen of Swendway came and she refused to get out of the sun. Carter. It was Marley he was waiting for when I ran into him outside the bathroom. It was always him, standing silently by, perhaps sneaking a kiss here and there, waiting for a time when they could truly be together. How much must she have loved him to be so careless, to risk so much? How could this even be real? It didn't seem possible. I knew that there would be a punishment for something like this, but that it had happened to Marley, that she was gone. I couldn't understand it. My stomach writhed. It so easily could have been me. If Aspen and I hadn't been so careful, if someone had overheard our conversation on the dance floor last night, that could have been us. Would I ever see Marley again? Where would she be sent? Would her parents have anything to do with her? I didn't know what Carter was before the draft made him a 2, though my guess was he was a 7. 7 was low, but it was better than 8 by a long shot. I couldn't believe she was an 8. This could not be real. Would Marley ever be able to use her hands again? How long did such wounds take to heal? And what about Carter? Would he even be able to walk after that? That could have been Aspen. That could have been me. I felt so sick. I had a cruel sense of relief that it wasn't me, and the guilt of that relief was so heavy it was hard to breathe. I was a terrible person, a terrible friend. I was ashamed. There was nothing left to do but cry. I spent the morning and most of the afternoon curled in a ball on my bed. My maids brought me lunch, but I couldn't touch it. Mercifully, they didn't insist on staying and let me be alone in my sadness. I couldn't pull myself together. The more I thought over what had happened, the sicker I felt. I couldn't get the sound of Marley screaming out of my head. I wondered if a time would come when I'd forget. A hesitant knock came at the door. My maids weren't here to open it, and I didn't feel like moving, so I didn't. After a brief pause, the visitor came in anyway.
America?
Maxon said quietly. I didn't answer. He shut the door and walked across the room to stand by my bed.
I'm sorry, he said. I didn't have a choice.
I stayed still, unable to speak.
It was that or kill them. The cameras found them last night and circulated the footage without us knowing, he insisted.
He didn't talk for a while, maybe thinking that if he stood there long enough, I'd find something I wanted to say to him. Finally, he knelt beside me.
America? Look at me, darling.
The endearment made my stomach turn. I did look at him, though.
I had to. I had to.
How could you just stand there? My voice sounded funny. How could you not do anything?
I told you once before that part of this job is looking calm even when you aren't. It's something I've had to master. You will too.
My brow folded together. He couldn't still think I wanted that now. Apparently he did. As he slowly took in my expression, his fell into absolute shock.
America, I know you're upset, but please, I told you, you're the only one. Please don't do this.
Maxon, I said slowly, I'm sorry, but I don't think I can do this. I could never stand by and watch someone get hurt like that, knowing it was my judgment that sent them there. I can't be a princess. He drew in a staggered breath, probably the closest thing to a truly sad emotion I'd ever seen from him.
America, you're basing the rest of your life on 5 minutes of someone else's. Things like that rarely happen. You wouldn't have to do that.
I sat up, hoping it would help me see matters more clearly. I can't even think right now.
Then don't,
he urged. Don't let this make a decision for the both of us when you're so upset.
Somehow, those words sounded like a trick.
Please, he whispered intensely, clutching my hands. The desperation in his voice made me look at him.
You promised you'd stay with me. Don't give up, not like this. Please.
I let out a breath and nodded. His relief was palpable.
Thank you.
Maxon sat there, holding on to my hand like a lifeline. It didn't feel like it did yesterday.
I know, he started. I know that you're hesitant about the job. I always knew that would be hard for you to embrace, and I'm sure this makes it harder. But what about me? Do you still feel sure about me?
I fidgeted, uncertain of what to say. I told you I couldn't think.
Oh, right.
His absolute dejection was clear.
I'll let you be for now. We'll talk soon, though.
He leaned forward like he might kiss me. I looked down, and he cleared his throat.
Goodbye, America.
Then he was gone, and I broke down all over again. Maybe minutes or hours later, my maids came in and found me bawling. I rolled over, and there was no way they could miss the pleading in my eyes. Oh, my lady, Mary cried, coming to embrace me. Let's get you ready for bed. Lucy and Anne began working on the buttons of my dress while Mary cleaned my face and smoothed my hair. My maids sat around me, comforting me as I cried. I wanted to explain that it was more than Marley, that it was this sick ache over Maxon, too, but it was embarrassing to admit how deeply I cared, how wrong I'd been. Then my heartbreak doubled when I asked for my parents, and Anne told me that all the families had been escorted away quickly. I didn't even get to say goodbye. Anne stroked my hair, gently shushing me. Mary was at my feet, rubbing my legs comfortingly. Lucy simply held her hands to my heart, as if she felt it all with me. Thank you, I whispered between sniffles. I'm sorry about earlier. They exchanged glances. There's nothing to apologize for, miss, Anne insisted. I wanted to correct her, because I'd certainly crossed the line with how I treated them, but another knock came at the door. I tried to think of how to politely say I didn't want to see Maxon right now, but when Lucy hopped up to answer it, Aspen's face was on the other side.
I'm sorry to disturb you, ladies, but I heard the crying and wanted to make sure you were all right, he said.
He crossed the floor toward my bed, a bold move considering the day we'd all had.
Lady America, I'm very sorry about your friend. I heard she was something special. If you need anything, I'm here.
The look in Aspen's eyes communicated so much that he was willing to sacrifice any number of things to make this better if he could, that he wanted to take it all away, if only for my sake. What an idiot I'd been. I'd almost given up the one person in the world who really knew me, really loved me. Aspen and I had been building a life together, and the selection nearly destroyed it. Aspen was home. Aspen was safe. Thank you, I replied quietly. Your kindness means a great deal to me. Aspen gave me an almost imperceptible smile. I could tell he wanted to stay, and I wanted that as well. But with my maids bustling around, it couldn't happen. I remembered thinking the other day that I would always have Aspen, and I was happy to find that it was absolutely true. Chapter 11.
Hey, kitten. I'm so sorry we didn't get to say goodbye. The king seemed to think it would be safest for the families to leave as soon as possible. I tried to get to you, I promise. It just didn't happen. I wanted to let you know we got home safely. The king let us keep our clothes, and May is spending every spare moment in those dresses. I suspect she's secretly hoping she never grows another inch, so she can use her ball gown at her wedding. It really lifts her spirits. I'm not sure I'll ever forgive the royal family for making two of my children watch that firsthand, but you know how resilient May is. It's you I'm worried about. Write us soon. Maybe this isn't the right thing to say. but I want you to know, when you ran for the stage, I've never been so proud of you in all my life. You've always been beautiful, you've always been talented. And now I know that your moral compass is perfectly aligned, that you see clearly when things are wrong, and you do everything you can to stop it. As a father, I can't ask for more. I love you, America, and I'm so, so proud. Dad.
How was it that Dad always knew what to say? I kind of wanted someone to rearrange the stars so they spelled out his words. I needed them big and bright, and somewhere I could see them when things felt dark. I love you, and I'm so, so proud. The elite were given the option of breakfast in their rooms, and I took it. I wasn't ready to see Maxon yet. By the afternoon, I was a bit more put together and decided to go down to the women's room for a while. If nothing else, there was at least a television, and I could stand to be distracted. The girls seemed surprised when I walked in, which I guess was to be expected. I did tend to hide from time to time, and if there was ever a moment to do that, it was now. Celeste was lounging on a couch, flipping through a magazine. Ilya didn't have newspapers like I'd heard other countries did. We had the report. Magazines were the closest things we had to printed news, and people like me could never afford them. Celeste always seemed to have one on hand, and for some reason that irritated me today. Chris and Elise were at a table drinking tea and talking as Natalie stood in the back looking out a window. "Oh, look," Celeste said to no one in particular. "Here's another of my ads." Celeste was a model. The idea of her flipping through pictures of herself drove my irritation deeper. "Lady America," someone called. I turned and saw the queen and some of her attendants in the corner. She looked like she was doing needlework. I curtsied and she waved me over. My stomach did a flip as I considered my behavior yesterday. I'd never intended to offend her and was suddenly afraid I'd done just that. I felt the eyes of the other girls on me. The queen usually spoke to us as a group, rarely one-on-one. I gave another curtsy as I approached. "Majesty, please sit, Lady America," she said kindly, motioning to an empty chair across from her. I obliged, still very nervous. "You put up quite a fight yesterday," she commented. I swallowed. "Yes, Your Majesty." "You were very close to her?" I choked back my sadness. "Yes, Your Majesty." She sighed. "A lady ought not to behave in such a way. The cameras were so focused on the action at hand that they missed your conduct. Still, it doesn't behoove you to lash out like that." It wasn't the order of a queen. It was the reprimand of a mother. That made it 1,000 times worse. It was like she felt responsible for me, and I'd let her down. I bowed my head. For the first time, I truly felt bad about how I reacted. She reached over and rested her hand on my knee. I looked up to her face, shocked by the casual touch. "All the same," she whispered, "I'm glad you did it." And she smiled at me. She was my best friend. "That doesn't stop because she's gone, sweetheart." Queen Amberlee patted my leg kindly. It was exactly what I needed, motherly affection. Tears bit at the corner of my eyes. "I don't know what to do," I whispered. I nearly let everything spill out right there about how I was feeling, but I was conscious of the eyes of the other girls on me. "I told myself I wouldn't get involved," she stated and sighed. "Even if I wanted to, I'm not sure there's much to say." She was right. What words could undo all that had happened? The queen leaned into me and spoke sweetly. "Still, go easy on him." I knew she meant well, but I really didn't want to discuss her son. I nodded and rose. She smiled at me kindly and gestured that I was free to go. I wandered over to sit with Elise and Chris. "How are you doing?" Elise asked sympathetically. "I'm fine. It's Marley I'm worried about." "At least they're together. They'll make it as long as they have each other," Chris commented. "How do you know Marley and Carter are together?" Maxon told me, she replied, as if it was common knowledge.
Oh, I said, disappointed. I can't believe he didn't tell you, of all people. You and Marley were so close. Besides, you're his favorite, right? She said.
I glanced at Chris, then at Elise. They both carried a look of concern in their eyes, but also maybe a sense of relief.
Celeste laughed.
She's obviously not anymore, she muttered, not bothering to look up from her magazine. Clearly, my fall was to be expected. I changed the subject back to Marley.
I still can't believe Maxon put them through that. It was disturbing how calm he was about it.
But what she did was wrong, Natalie remarked. There wasn't anything judgmental about her tone, only a quiet acceptance like she was following instructions.
Elise spoke up.
He could have had them killed. The law is on his side on that one. He showed them mercy.
Mercy, I scoffed. You call having your skin torn apart in public merciful?
Yes, all things considered, she continued. I bet if we could ask Marley, she'd choose caning over dying.
Elise is right, Chris said. I agree that it was absolutely terrible, but I would rather have that than death.
Please, I sneered, my anger coming to the surface. You're a three. Everyone knows your dad's a famous professor, and you've lived your whole life in libraries, completely comfortable. You'd never survive the beating, let alone a life as an eight afterward. You'd be begging to die.
Chris glared at me. Don't pretend that you know anything about what I can and cannot tolerate. Just because you're a five, you think you're the only one who's ever suffered?
No, but I'm sure I've experienced far worse than you, I said, my voice rising in anger. And I couldn't take what Marley went through. I'm saying I doubt you'd fare any better.
I'm braver than you think, America. You have no idea the things I've sacrificed over the years. And if I make a mistake, I own up to the consequences.
Why should there be any consequences at all? I posed. Maxon keeps saying how difficult the selection is for him, how hard it is to make the choice. And then one of us falls for someone else. Shouldn't he be thanking her for making his decision easier?
Natalie, seeming distressed, tried to interject.
I heard the funniest thing yesterday. But the law, Chris called over her.
America has a point, Elise countered quickly, and the ordered conversation crumbled. We were speaking over one another, trying to make our opinions heard, justifying why we thought what happened was wrong or right. This was a first, but something I'd been expecting from the start. With this many girls together competing against one another, there was no way we wouldn't fight eventually.
Then, in a disconnected voice, Celeste mumbled to her magazine as we continued to argue, "Got what she deserved, whore." The following silence was as charged as our quarrel. Celeste looked over her shoulder just in time to see me lunge at her. She screamed as I landed on her, knocking us both into a coffee table. I heard something, probably a cup of tea, smash onto the floor. I'd closed my eyes mid-jump, and when I opened them, Celeste was underneath me, trying to grab at my wrists. I pulled my right arm and slapped her as hard as I could across her face. The burning sensation in my hand was nearly overwhelming, but it was worth it to hear the satisfying smack that erupted when it made contact. Celeste immediately let out a shriek and started clawing at me. For the first time, I regretted not keeping my nails long like the other girls did. She made a few cuts on my arm, which only angered me more, and I struck her again. This time I cut her lip. In response to the pain, she reached for something, the saucer from her cup of tea, and slammed it against the side of my head. Thrown off, I tried to grab at her again, but people were pulling us apart. I was so consumed I hadn't noticed someone calling for the guards. I took a swing at one of them, too. I was tired of being manhandled.
Did you see what she did to me? Celeste cried.
You keep your mouth shut, I screamed. Don't you ever talk about Marley again.
She's crazy, don't you hear her? Did you see what she did?
Let me go, I said, struggling against the guard.
You're psychotic. I'm going to tell Maxon right now. You can kiss the palace goodbye, she threatened.
No one's seeing Maxon right now, the Queen said sternly. She looked into Celeste's eyes and then into mine. Her disappointment was clear. I hung my head.
You're both going to the hospital wing.
The hospital wing was a long, pristine corridor with beds against the walls. Pinned by the head of each bed was a curtain to wrap around for privacy. Cabinets of medical supplies were scattered throughout. Wisely, Celeste and I were placed at opposite ends of the wing, with Celeste being closer to the entrance, and me near a window in the back. She'd pulled her curtain partially around her bed almost immediately so she wouldn't have to see me. I couldn't blame her. I did have a rather smug look on my face. Even while the nurse tended to the sore spot behind my hairline where Celeste had hit me, I couldn't bring myself to grimace.
Now hold this ice here and that will help keep the swelling down, she offered.
Thanks, I replied. The nurse looked up and down the wing quickly, seeming to check that no one could hear us. Good for you, she whispered. Most everyone's been waiting for something like this to happen. Really? I asked, my voice as low as hers. I probably shouldn't have been smiling this much. I can't begin to count the horror stories I've heard about that one, she said, nodding her head toward Celeste's curtained bed. Horror stories? Well, she provoked that one girl who hit her. Anna? How do you know? Maxon's a good man, she said simply. He made sure she was checked out here before she went home. She told us what Celeste said about her parents. It was so filthy, I can't repeat it. The look on her face conveyed her disgust. Poor Anna, I knew it had to be something like that. One girl came in with her feet bleeding after someone slipped glass in her shoes in the night. We can't prove it was Celeste, but who else would do something so mean? I never heard about that, I gasped. She looked terrified that she might get worse. I suppose she chose to keep her mouth shut. And Celeste hits her maids, not with anything more than her hands, but they come in for ice from time to time. No. All the maids I'd encountered were sweet girls. I couldn't imagine any of them doing something that would provoke getting hit at all, let alone regularly. Suffice it to say, your antics are making the rounds already. You're a hero around here, the nurse said with a wink. I didn't feel like a hero. Wait, I said suddenly. You said Maxon had Anna checked out before he sent her home. Yes, miss. He's very concerned that you're all taken care of. What about Marley? Did she come here? How was she before she left? Before the nurse could answer, I heard Celeste's pouty voice pierce the room. Maxon, sweetheart, she called as he marched through the doorway. We shared a brief moment of eye contact before he approached Celeste's bed. The nurse walked away, leaving me alone and aching to know if she'd actually seen Marley. The sound of Celeste's whiny voice was almost too irritating to bear. I heard Maxon murmur his condolences, comforting the poor thing before extricating himself. He made his way around her curtain and focused his eyes on me, seeming exhausted as he walked down the wing.
You're lucky my father had the cameras barred from the palace, otherwise there'd be hell to pay for your actions.
He ran his hand through his hair, exasperated.
How am I supposed to defend this, America?
Are you going to kick me out then? I played with a piece of my dress while I waited for his answer.
Of course not.
What about her? I asked, nodding my head toward Celeste's bed.
No, you're all stressed after yesterday, and I can't hold that against you. I'm not sure my father will accept that excuse, but that's what I'm going to say.
I paused. Maybe you should tell him it was my fault. Maybe you should just send me home.
America, you're overreacting.
Look at me, Maxon, I urged. I felt the lump rising in my throat and fought to speak past it. I've known from the beginning I don't have what it takes, and I thought that I could, I don't know, change or somehow make it work. But I can't stay here. I can't. Maxon moved to sit on the edge of my bed.
America, you might hate the selection and you might be mad about what happened to Marley, but I know that you care about me enough not to just abandon me in this.
I reached for his hand. I also care enough about you to tell you you're making a mistake. I could see the pain in Maxon's face as he held my hand tighter, as if he could hold me there and keep me from disappearing. Hesitantly, he leaned in and whispered,
"It's not always so difficult, and I want to show that to you, but you have to give me time. I can prove that there are good things to this, but you have to wait."
I inhaled to contradict him, but he cut me off.
"For weeks, America, you've asked me for time, and I gave it to you without question, because I had faith in you. Please, I need you to have a little bit of faith in me, too."
I didn't know what Maxon could possibly show me that might change my mind, but how could I not give him more time when he'd done that for me? I sighed. "Fine."
"Thank you."
The relief in his voice was obvious.
"I have to get back, but I'll come see you soon."
I nodded. Maxon stood and left, stopping briefly to tell Celeste goodbye. I watched him go, and wondered if trusting him was a bad idea. Chapter 12. Both Celeste's and my injuries were minimal, so we were sent back to our rooms within an hour. They staggered our release time so we didn't have to leave together, and thank goodness for that. As I turned the corner at the top of the stairs, I saw a guard coming toward me. Aspen. Even though he was bigger after being bulked up from training, I knew his walk and his shadow, and a thousand other things that were ingrained in my heart. As he approached, he stopped to give me an unnecessary bow.
"Jar,"
he whispered, and rose again, continuing on his path. I stood there for a split second confused, and then realized what he meant. Fighting the urge to run, I moved down the hall eagerly. I opened the door and was both surprised and relieved to find that all three of my maids were out. I went over to the jar on my bedside table and found that the one little penny in there had company. I opened the lid and pulled out the folded sheet of paper. How clever of him. My maids probably wouldn't have noticed it, and if they had, they never would have intruded on my privacy. I unfolded the note and read a very clear list of instructions. It seemed Aspen and I had a date tonight. The directions Aspen gave me were complicated. I took a roundabout way to get to the first floor, where I was to look for the door next to the 5-foot-high vase. I remembered that vase from walking around the palace before. What flower in the world needed a container that big? I found the door and looked around to double-check that no one saw me. I'd never managed to find myself so free from the eyes of the guards. Not a one in sight. I opened the door slowly and crept inside. The moon shone through the window, giving the room sparse light and making me feel a little nervous. "Aspen?" I whispered into the darkness, feeling silly and scared all at once.
"Just like old times, eh?"
his voice called, though I couldn't see him. "Where are you?" I squinted, trying to find his form. Then the shadow of the heavy drape by the window shifted in the moonlight, and Aspen appeared from behind it. "You startled me," I complained jokingly.
"Wouldn't be the first time, won't be the last."
I heard the smile in his voice. I walked over to him, knocking into every obstacle along the way, it seemed.
"Shh," he complained. "The entire palace is going to know we're in here if you keep pushing things over."
But I could tell he was playing. "Sorry," I said, laughing quietly. "Can't we turn on a light?"
"No, if someone sees it shining under the door, we might get caught. This corridor isn't checked a lot, but I want to be smart."
"How did you even know about this room?" I reached out, making contact with Aspen's arms at last. He pulled me in for a hug and then started walking me toward the back corner.
"I'm a guard," he said simply, "and I'm very good at what I do. I know the entire grounds of the palace inside and out. Every last pathway, all the hiding spots, and even most of the secret rooms. I also happen to know the rotations of the guards, which areas are usually the least checked, and the points in the day when the guards are at their fewest. If you ever want to sneak around the palace, I'm the guy to do it with."
"Unbelievable," I mumbled. We sat behind the broad back of a couch, the floor blanketed in a patch of moonlight. Finally, I could see Aspen's face. I questioned him seriously. Are you sure this is safe? If he hesitated at all, I was planning to bolt that very second, for both our sakes.
Trust me, Mayor. An extraordinary number of things would have to happen for someone to find us here. We're safe.
I was still worried, but I needed to be comforted so badly, I went along. He wrapped an arm around me and pulled me in close.
How are you doing?
I sighed. Okay, I guess. I've been sad a lot and angry. Mostly I wish I could undo the last 2 days and get Marley back. Carter, too. And I didn't even know him.
I did. He sighed. He's a great guy. I heard he was telling Marley he loved her the whole time, and trying to help her get through it.
He was, I confirmed. At least in the beginning, anyway. I got hauled off before it was over. Aspen kissed my head.
Yeah, I heard about that, too. I'm proud you went out with a fight. That's my girl.
My dad was proud, too. The Queen said I shouldn't act that way, but she was glad I did. It's been confusing. Like it was almost a good idea, but not really. And then it didn't fix anything anyway. Aspen held me closer.
It was good. It meant a lot to me.
To you?
Yeah,
he whispered, seeming reluctant to share.
Every once in a while, I wonder if the selection has changed you. You've been so taken care of, and everything is so fancy. I keep wondering if you're the same America. That let me know that you are, that they haven't gotten to you.
Oh, they're getting to me all right, but not like that. Mostly this place reminds me that I wasn't born to do this. I ducked my head into Aspen's chest, the safe place where I'd always hidden when things were bad.
Listen, Mayor, the thing about Maxon is that he's an actor. He's always putting on this perfect face, like he's so above everything. But he's just a person, and he's as messed up as anyone else. I know you care about him or you wouldn't have stayed here. But you have to know now that it's not real.
I nodded. Maxim, with his talk about putting on a calm face. Was that what he was always doing? Was he acting when he was with me? How was I supposed to be able to tell? Aspen continued.
It's better you know now. What if you got married and then found out it was like this?
I know, I've been thinking about that myself. Maxon's words on the dance floor played themselves on repeat in my head. He seemed so sure of our future, prepared to give me so much. I sincerely thought the only thing he wanted was for me to be happy. Couldn't he see how unhappy I was now?
You've got a big heart, Mayor. I know you can't just get over things, but it's okay to want to, that's all.
I feel so stupid, I whispered, wanting to cry.
You're not stupid.
I am, too.
Mayor, do you think I'm smart?
Of course.
That's because I am, and I'm way too smart to be in love with a stupid girl, so you can stop that right now.
I gave a tiny laugh and let Aspen hold on to me. I feel like I've hurt you so much. I don't understand how you can still possibly be in love with me, I confessed. He shrugged.
It's just the way it is. The sky is blue, the sun is bright, and Aspen endlessly loves America. It's how the world was designed to be. Seriously, Mayor, you're the only girl I ever wanted. I couldn't imagine being with anyone else. I've been trying to prepare myself for that just in case, and I can't.
We sat there holding each other for a moment. Every little tickle of Aspen's fingers, the warmth of his breath in my hair, felt like medicine for my heart.
We shouldn't stay much longer,
he said. I'm pretty confident in my abilities, but I don't want to push it. I sighed. It felt like we'd only just gotten here, but he was probably right. I moved to stand, and Aspen jumped up to help me. He pulled me in for one last hug.
I know it's hard to believe, but I'm really sorry Maxon turned out to be such a bad guy. I wanted you back, but I didn't want you to get hurt. Especially not like that.
Thanks.
I mean it.
I know you do. Aspen had his faults, but he didn't have it in him to be a liar. It's not over, though. Not if I'm still here.
Yeah, but I know you. You'll ride it out so your family gets money and you can see me. But he'd have to reverse time to fix this. I let out a long breath. It felt like he might be right. Maxon's hold on me was slipping away, shrugging off my skin like a coat.
Don't worry, Mare. I'll take care of you.
Aspen didn't have any way to prove that at the moment, but I believed him. He'd do anything for the people he loved, and I knew without question that I was the person he loved the most. The next morning, I let my mind wander to Aspen all through getting ready, breakfast, and my hours in the women's room. I was blissfully detached until the slap of a pile of papers on the table in front of me jarred me back to the real world. I looked up to see Celeste, still sporting a puffy lip. She pointed to one of her gossip magazines, open to a 2-page spread. It didn't even take a full second for me to recognize Marley's face, even though it was twisted with pain from the caning.
"Thought you should see this," Celeste said before she walked away.
I wasn't exactly sure what she meant, but I was so eager to know anything about Marley, I dived in.
Of all our country's great traditions, perhaps none is looked upon with such excitement as the selection. Created specifically to bring joy to a saddened nation, it seems everyone still gets a little giddy watching the great love story of a prince and his future princess unfold. When Gregory Ilya took the throne more than 80 years ago, and his elder son Spencer died suddenly, the entire country mourned the loss of such an enigmatic and promising young man. When his younger son Damon was set to inherit the throne, many wondered if he was ready even to train for the task at 19. But Damon knew he was prepared to step into adulthood and set out to prove it via the greatest commitment in life, marriage. Within months, the selection was born, and the spirits of the country were lifted by the possibility of an average girl becoming the first princess of Ilia. However, since then, we have been forced to wonder at the effectiveness of the competition. While a romantic idea at heart, some say it's unfair to force princes to marry women beneath them, though no one can deny the absolute poise and beauty of our current queen, Amberly Station Shreve. Some of us still remember the rumors of Abby Tamblyn Ilya, who allegedly poisoned her husband, Prince Justin Ilya, only a few years into their marriage, before agreeing to marry his cousin, Porter Shreve, thus keeping the royal line intact. While that rumor has never been confirmed, what we can say for sure is that the behavior of the women in the palace this time around is nothing short of scandalous. Marley Thames, now an 8, was caught with a guard undressing her in a closet Monday night, after the Halloween ball that was billed to be the highlight of the selection programming. Its splendor was completely overshadowed by Miss Thames's reckless behavior, sending the palace into a frenzy the very next morning. But beyond Miss Thames's inexcusable actions, the girls remaining at the palace might not be crown-worthy either. An unnamed source tells us that some of the elite are constantly bickering, rarely making the effort to perform the duties they're required to. Everyone remembers Anna Farmer's dismissal in early September after deliberately attacking the lovely Celeste Newsome, a model from Claremont. And our source confirms that that isn't the only physical interaction to take place at the palace between the elite, forcing this reporter to question the pool of girls chosen for Prince Maxon. When asked for a comment on these rumors, King Clarkson only said, "Some of the girls come from less refined castes, and aren't used to the proper behavior expected at the palace. Clearly, Miss Thames wasn't prepared for life as a one. My wife has a particular indefinable quality about her, and is one of the rare exceptions to the rule of lower castes. She has always sought to raise herself to a level befitting a queen, and it would be quite a challenge to find someone more suited for the throne than she. But for some of the lower castes remaining in the current selection, it would be difficult to say we weren't expecting this from them. While Natalie Luca and Elise Wisks are both 4s, they have always been the height of refinement when presented to the public, particularly Lady Elise, who is quite sophisticated. We are forced to assume our king is referring to America Singer, the only 5 who made it past day 1 of the selection. Miss Singer has had an average run at the selection. She's pretty enough, but not quite what Ilya was expecting for its new princess. From time to time, her interviews on the Capitol Report are entertaining, but we need a new leader, not a comedienne. In further disturbing news,